The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I am on the radio.
George Brockler, 710 KNUS, getting right back to it. Pat's on the line. Love to hear your thoughts at 303-696-1971, talking about, and this hits me close to home. This isn't some faraway school district with kids I don't know or care about. My kids are Douglas County public school going kids. I love our teachers. I have, whether the kids have gone through charter school or the neighborhood schools, I've been a big supporter of them. They've always been accommodating whenever I've needed to do something. I've worked out ahead of time with them. Even the most recent thing where I took my two youngest out of school on a Thursday and a Friday. I said, hey, I've got some Army business. I'm going to take them along. We're going to have a good time. I said, maybe a week before, I'm like, what are their assignments? What can we do ahead of time? What can we do on the trip? What can we do? And they've always been responsive and great. Love them. This is different. This is different. And this idea that because they object to the removal of the school superintendent, they will either want to show their support for him or show their opposition to the school board's, it looks like, unforced error in the method in which they started rolling this thing out by having a meeting that may, I don't know the answer yet, may have violated our open meetings laws. But to then say on the heels of a snow day, we're going to have another sick in on a Thursday, I don't know, man, you are going to lose me. And I just wonder if people out there have different thoughts on that. Does this change your opinion? Or is it a neutral for you? Like, yeah, I don't care. One more day at home with the kids, whatever. So they're not learning stuff. You know, I don't know. 303-696-1971. I want to hear from Pat and Aurora. Pat, you're on 710 KNUS. What do you think?
Well, one of the things socially that is just an article of faith in the conversation about education has been for, and I have two brothers that were teachers. They're retired now. Oh, I know wonderful teachers. All of my kids' teachers are just perfect. They're marvelous human beings, and they care about puppies, and they are the enemy. People have to come to conclusion that
the
they
teachers
are
the enemy?
Enemy. Because let me finish. They are the foot soldiers of the whatever bureaucratic decisions are made at the higher up level of the educational. Nomenclature, that Russian term for, bureaucrat. They just follow lockstep. Last summer, you could take a graduate course, I think at UNC, a teacher graduate course in Robin DiAngelo's White Fragility. And they brought that back to the classroom, and that was infected in Cherry Creek School over here at Grandview, and I'm sure throughout other of the Cherry Creek school system. I don't have kids in school. My kids are all grown and gone, but I, observe this stuff. And this notion that teachers are just angelic and some sort of nun-like qualities is just wrong. We wouldn't put up with football coaches with this type of result. We are losing ground at a unbelievable rate. And one of the solutions is they got to have affirmative action for men, for elementary school teachers. I've done some mentoring over the years, and I've been to three or four elementary schools. You can't find a man anywhere other than the guy carrying a gun.
And you think it's because they're discriminating against men in the hiring process?
Well, there aren't that many men that are attractive. They got to have some incentive to go into teaching. Women are sort of, I think, culturally and socially a little bit more inclined, if you will, to go into the teaching, nurturing society that is teaching nowadays. But that's got to change. There are just too many. If you're brought up by women, you've got a lot of single mothers. You go to school and there's all women. This isn't good.
Yeah, Pat, I want to revisit something that you said. One of the things that you said, Pat, was they're not all nun-like, angelic, flawless. First off, I've never said that. I haven't heard anybody say that.
No,
but
I'm not saying
hang on, Pat. Hang on, brother. Hang on, Pat. Pat, we got to do this you, me, now right. at the same time, okay? So yeah. when you say we can't just conclude that about all of them, what intrigues me is you are willing to conclude and announce that they, I presume that means all of them, are the enemy, which is a strong term. What are they the enemy of?
Well, they're the enemy of parental rights, that's for sure.
All of them.
Look, it's a gross generalization, but it seems like the result is that if a whoever is above school principals or school administrators or school union reps, if they come down with an order, you don't see three or four or five teachers going, "Oh, well, we're not going to be involved with that." They all salute the flag and follow through with strikes.
They all don't, but that's not accurate, Pat. They all don't. There are a good number that do, no doubt about it. There's a good number that do the bidding of the union, and I think that's what makes the union so dangerous. But to suggest that it's all of them, man, that just defies my own experience with the teachers in my kids' schools.
Everybody has their teacher that was so kind to them, and just as you represented a moment ago, got your kids assignments for when they were out Thursdays and Fridays and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't really have much to do with the overall tone and direction of the ultimate outcome of, you know, okay, we just finished the whole week or almost we're halfway through a week of Black Lives Matter in all of the Cherry Creek School District, week of action. And also, it's in DPS. Nobody says boo about that. No teacher.
I don't know what they say, man. I don't know. I don't really know. I don't know if they're opposed to it or how they voice their opposition to it. I don't know what your expectation is that they're going to quit teaching and maybe some. I don't know the answer to any of that stuff, man. But to bring you back to this issue right here, I presume I know the answer already from you, but I presume you're opposed to the idea that they would strike in order to show their solidarity with the school superintendent or their opposition to the actions of the school board.
Yeah, I don't think they have a right to strike.
And it's a sick out, so it's not the same. But you and I know that it feels exactly the same. It feels the same. Yeah.
Distinction without a difference, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it does in terms of the impact on the school and the kids. It absolutely, you're right, it is. But it's just different.
One more day that kids aren't being taught. When are teachers going to say, look, I have a duty to these children and these parents?
I think some of them do. It's not every single teacher that's going to do the sick out tomorrow. It's 1,000, which feels like a lot. And I don't know how many teachers we have in Douglas County, so I'd love to know the answer to that. But it's not all of them. So some of them are like, maybe even, and they might even agree, hey, I love Corey Wise. I think what the school board did is dumb. I don't like them. But they're still going to show up and work. Well, you know what? Hats off to them. Thank you. Thank you for doing the thing that you'd signed up to do. And we pay you for it. I appreciate that. The rest of them, I don't know, man. I kind of want there to be a published list of everybody that call every teacher that calls in sick for tomorrow from Douglas County. I think it ought to be posted on the school board website. I don't think it's a HIPAA thing. You've used your sick leave. You can use it for one of a million things. Let's post. Let's know who are the teachers that pick themselves over the kids.
Well, in general, and, you know, we'll agree to disagree, but there's no ethos of duty before desire. Duty has no play in the educational universe.
Well, I don't know about that, man. I mean,
the results are in.
No, listen. So again, are there things that can be improved with the education system? For sure, and that's not what this topic is about. I don't think we have a flawless system, but I'm not going to throw all the teachers into they're the enemy bus because of whatever it is that you voiced as your concerns with their performance. There are some teachers that suck, no doubt about it. And there are some other teachers that are wizards in there. There's also no doubt about that. But the thing that bothers me is not, hey, are they showing up to work every day, but they could be doing a little bit better? That's important to me. But now I'm just not going to show up to work tomorrow. Okay, that's frustrating on a different kind of level. And that is a duty-related level, right?
Yeah, levels are levels. It's part of the educational universe that they have this apparent perception that this is just okay. Hey, another day out of school, you know, I really need to get my political voice heard. And, you know, that is, again, there's no sense of real sacrifice for the kids.
I'm a huge fan of anybody, teachers included, being able to voice their opposition to stuff, but not in the classroom and not by avoiding the classroom. And, Pat, by the way, thank you for the spirited conversation and the phone call. Want to get to some other callers. Pat's line is open at 303-696-1971. I'm all about them voicing their opinion. And in fact, show up en masse at the next school board meeting and carry pickets and torches and pitchforks and demand the heads of Alfredo Garcia. And I don't care. I don't do that. But when you start saying, I'm going to not do my job that impacts you and potentially child care, but at a minimum, the education of your kids, you lose me. You lose me. Now I'm not a big supporter anymore. We'll just have to see. But I do think it's fair if you're going to use your public job to avoid the public classroom to teach my kids that the public ought to know who you are. So my vote is the school board vote to publish online the names of every single teacher who bails on school tomorrow in support of their interests. I think we ought to know who those people are. And if the teachers are like, we don't care, great. I'd like to know. I'd like to know which of my teachers made that choice. Let's go to the phone line. Jim from Littleton, you're on 710 KNUS.
Good morning, George.
Hey.
My opinion is twofold, or my answer to that is homeschooling and charter schools to these situations. And Douglas County is on the forefront of charter schools, I'll say that. But, you know, that's how you keep the teacher unions in check, knowing that parents have another option.
I think that's did your kids go to charter schools or private schools?
Absolutely. They went to STEM.
And did they go to STEM all the way through 12, K through 12?
Oh, no, they're 12th grade. They're at CU.
They're at CU Boulder?
No, CU Denver. They were able to transfer everything to go to CU Denver. So
wow, that's impressive.
Achievers, but they're just, that's really good because I was thinking to myself, oh, we don't have to worry about that. They're at CU.
Right, that's
so,
pretty
yeah,
good.
You know that. And you know what the school board lost me a couple years ago, the school board tried to take out STEM because of the shooting, if you recall that, and they were trying to take out their funding. I knew that school board was just part of the teachers' union. They were shields for them when they tried to take them out because of the funding and stuff like that. And then the parents rose up, and they did it in the summertime. I don't know if you recall that. And the whole parents showed up for saying, you can't do this, and so that's kind of my point. But
yeah, I'm a big fan of the charter schools. My kids have all gone K through 5 charter schools, and then we transition them to the neighborhood schools. And look, I love Rocky Heights. I love Rock Canyon. Those are great, high-achieving schools. I like them. I'm glad my kids went to Platte River Academy. I think it's a phenomenal charter school, and I love the model, and I agree with you to that end. I think what you're talking about, Jim, and what the public school system may start to feel is an increasing shift away from the neighborhood schools because of stuff like this. Because in all the time we were at Platte River for 4 kids, 13 years, I don't remember a single time that there was a teacher sick out or nothing, right. Not a single time.
Well, to that credit, I will say this. No teacher goes to a charter school to make more money.
That's true.
That doesn't happen.
That's true.
So those teachers are going there for the love of teaching. And it's clearly you can say that. You can say these teachers are actually wanting to teach the kids, and they want to teach kids that want to learn. And that's really why they do it, because they don't want to deal with all the politics and all that stuff. And I've been pretty much happy with the way charter schools are going. And I know that, you know, I heard at one time the old school board didn't want to do any more charter schools.
No, that's true. I heard that same thing, too.
They felt that they were a threat. They were a threat. And
they
there were
are
too many, and they needed to take them out.
They're a threat to the existing infrastructure. They're not a threat to the kids. I mean, the kids are going to do much better under that. And, Jim, I appreciate this phone call. That's fantastic. I like that thought, and I agree with you that I think this is going to tend to push people into thinking about other options other than neighborhood schools. Let's go to Ed from Aurora. You're on 710 KNUS. Ed, what do you think?
I just wanted to say, I believe that the Douglas County school teachers are, well, I believe that they're the most underpaid teachers in the state and probably the wealthiest county in the state.
When you say they're the most underpaid in the state and you believe that, is that based off of some numbers you've seen, or is that how it feels?
That would be based off of what I know, teachers that I know that work in Douglas County are being paid.
But you know that they're being paid less than those out in like Rout County or Garfield County or on the plains?
Or Douglas County or Aurora?
Yeah, no, I'm saying you think the Douglas County teachers are paid less than the teachers out in the rural parts of the state of Colorado?
No, I don't know what they get paid. I see your point. I would say, how about the Denver metro area?
Okay, all right. And so how does, and tell me how that feeds into this discussion.
Well, they've been catching the tail end of everything for years. And
what does that mean?
Well, they're not getting their due. What the effort that they put forward into these children is not recognized enough.
Through money is what you're saying. Through money,
right?
So how does that feed into this decision tomorrow?
Dedicated teachers out there. I know they work on their vacation time. They work through the summer. They spend a lot of time out there.
I get it, but I'm asking now. Take that next step. So what? Now, how does that feed into the discussion about what they're going to do tomorrow? Do you then support them in skipping a day of work?
I absolutely do. And here's
and why?
The thing.
Tell me why.
Now, I support them because this is just another thing on top of what has happened over the years. I mean, they had to fight to get a pay raise not too long ago.
Okay, but you support them in cheating our kids out of another day of education to advance their own political...
I don't see it like that. I don't think it's like cheating our kids, their kids out of...
Well, how would you describe it?
Otherwise, it would be rolling over and just taking another...
Hold on. But Ed, by rolling over and taking it, you mean showing up to work like you're paid to do. Is that rolling over and taking it? I mean, they're paid to come in and teach. Fair? They get a snow day today, just like all the kids do, and I'm not going to debate whether that was right or wrong, although in my lifetime in public education in Jefferson County, I think I can count, and Alexa texted the same thing, maybe 5-6 snow days ever that I can remember, but I don't want to debate that. I want to say, how is what they're doing not anything other than completely selfish and not focused on teaching my kids?
I think it's a sign of solidarity in what's happening with the superintendent of the...
Why don't they do it on Saturday? Why don't they show their solidarity on Saturday or today?
Well, that wouldn't make as much impact, would it?
So that's the point, right? They're choosing to sacrifice our kids' day of education because they want to make a point, and that is selfish.
Well, how about this? Wait, maybe that those four on the school board are making something happen that is causing the teachers to do this.
So the teachers aren't, Ed, what I hear you saying, and forgive me, we're out of time, man. I'd love to keep talking with you. But what I hear you saying, Ed, is it's the school board's fault for creating an environment where the teachers are helpless. They simply had to walk out on the kids in the classrooms. They couldn't help it. Come on, man. That doesn't make any sense. Look, we can continue this conversation when we come back, 303-696-1971. Until that time, George Brockler, 710 KNUS. George Brocker back with you here on 710 KNUS. You may have heard, whether you listen to Pete's show or you're just following the news in general, that Whoopi Goldberg from The View had voiced an opinion that the Holocaust wasn't about race. Incredibly controversial comment, and it resulted in some backlash, and she was suspended for 2 weeks. And it becomes a conversation about cancel culture that we're continuing to have. And you heard Pete and probably followed on your own the idea that Spotify is now in the crosshairs of the woke elite as they seek to withdraw their art from Spotify while Joe Rogan is still on there. I think Joe Rogan weathers this storm. And if he doesn't, he's going to end up with some big fat paycheck to do nothing and move on and do it somewhere else. But there's another aspect of this, and I want to echo this part. When Pete says, and I think he's right here, that Whoopi Goldberg gets a 2-week suspension when a white dude would have been fired, I just truly think that's undeniable. Let me give you an example here that should scare the bejesus out of you too for the future as well as the present. There's a guy named Ilya Shapiro. Ilya Shapiro is wicked smart, constitutional lawyer type guy. Has a great pedigree. I think he went to Princeton. He got a degree from the London School of Economics. He got a law degree from the University of Chicago, all top-tier schools. He's a conservative thinker. If I'm wrong on this, forgive me. I think he's an originalist-type thinker in terms of the interpretation of the Constitution. He had written prolifically and been published all over the place, including Harvard and National Review and some other publications. I think, too, he was a big-time writer for the Cato Institute, which is a libertarian think tank, and he would write on the law and stuff. And he recently was hired to a place called the Georgetown Law School, which is one of the premier law schools in the United States of America. And he was hired there to fill a role in the Center for the Constitution. And that is something that exists because of a grant, I presume, a donation from an uber-rich conservative person who was like, my God, we need to have some kind of voice of conservatism there to at least defend the Constitution. And so he gets hired or appointed to fill this position. Now, let's catch up to what happened last week, right? Let's look at what happened on January the 26th. There is a ton of discussion here on the radio as well, everywhere, about President Biden's decision to say, I am committed to my campaign pledge with Clyburn from South Carolina that helped me keep my campaign on track for president, may have won me the election. And I am only going to look at black women for an appointment to the Supreme Court. That in and of itself should be considered highly controversial. It seems like it's a violation of any sort of spirit of affirmative action. But here's what Ilya Shapiro, incoming director of Georgetown Law School Center for Constitution, tweets out. The tweet has since been deleted, and we'll talk about that. But he writes, objectively, the best pick for Biden is a judge named Sri Srinivasan, who is a solid, progressive, and very smart. She has identity politics benefit of being the first Asian, parenthetically writes, Indian American, but alas, doesn't fit into the latest intersectionality hierarchy. So we'll get a lesser black woman. Thank heaven for small favors, ? He follows that up with, because Biden said he's only considering black women for SCOTUS, his nominee will always have an asterisk attached. Fitting that the court takes up affirmative action in the next term. And then he asks a question, is Joe Biden racist and sexist for saying his Supreme Court nominee will be a black woman? Wow. I mean, that just blows your doors off. I mean, you hear that and you think to yourself, my God, that is Ku Klux Klan offensive, right? Like, that is crazy that he would suggest that another woman of color, apparently a progressive, is super qualified to be on the bench, but won't even be considered because she fails to meet the demographic box that Biden has pledged to check. That's what he tweets, right? The Georgetown Law School world comes unhinged and starts to blow up. The law school dean, his name is Trainer, and all the other administration saying, oh my God, have you seen what's happened? This is so bad. This is so horrible. But you know what? Georgetown Law School publishes online their policy on speech and expression. This is actually Georgetown itself, not just the law school. And I'm going to read this to you. This was approved June the 8th, 2017. It's online for anyone to go find. It says, as an institution of higher education, one specifically committed to the Catholic and Jesuit tradition, Georgetown University is committed to free and open inquiry, deliberation, and debate in all matters, and the untrammeled verbal and nonverbal expression of ideas. Untrammeled is a big word, but it means have at it. We're not going to constrain you. It is Georgetown University's policy to provide all members of the university community, including faculty, students, and staff, wait for these words, the broadest possible latitude to speak, write, listen, challenge, and learn. Next paragraph. The ideas of different members of the university community will often and naturally conflict. It is not the proper role of a university to insulate individuals from ideas and opinions they find unwelcome, disagreeable, or even deeply offensive. Deliberation or debate may not be suppressed because the ideas put forth are thought by some or even by most members of the university community to be offensive, unwise, immoral, or ill-conceived. And there are I'm at six other paragraphs after that. That is phenomenal, isn't it? I mean, that is a strong defense of the idea. And remember, Georgetown Law School is not a public school. It's not bound by the First Amendment. But it is a strong defense of the principles embodied in that First Amendment. And in fact, in any educational institution you'd want to send your kid to, right? We are going to have an exchange of ideas whether they piss you off or not. That's great. And it's in writing. And my God, it's been adopted since 2017. So what did they do in response to Ilya Shapiro's tweets that I read to you? Those incredibly, incredibly toxic tweets. They suspended him. He hasn't even taken his post. He's not allowed on campus while they conduct an investigation to see if his tweets violate school policy in some way. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's one of the top institutions in America putting out every single year a new batch of attorneys that are going to fill spots, some in government, some in business, some elsewhere. These are the, this is the incubator for some of the future, quote unquote, great legal minds that will come out. And this is how they respond. Yesterday, apparently, they had a big sit-in where a bunch of the kids took a page out of the Douglas County Teacher School book and they skipped class. And they did it so that they could go to something to voice their concerns to the law school dean, who appears, based on the description that I read, and there's an article posted at National Review called Georgetown Law Student Stage Sit-In Demand Dean Fire Ilya Shapiro. By all accounts, it feels like he just melted in front of them. He says to the student body that shows up that he was appalled by the painful nature of Shapiro's tweets and promised to listen, learn, and ultimately do better. I mean, this self-flagellation in front of this group of whiny intellectual weaklings that apparently flies in defiance of the posted words, this strong embrace of this free expression. There were students that voiced their interest in seeing that Georgetown defund the Center for the Constitution. Here's some stuff that some students said that were voiced in this thing, and they're quotes. You can do as much diversity training as you want with staff, but I feel like that center has a certain ideology, so I really want you to defend why we really need it beyond, like, you know, free speech and beyond diversity of opinion. I really want us to think critically about why we still need it. Did you hear how just quickly they brush aside the idea of freedom of speech and diversity of opinion? Like, beyond those teeny tiny things, why would we need such a center? Other students demanded that as reparations, a word that is becoming increasingly difficult to not view as just pure political toxicity, right? It's just horrible. They demand that the dean cover for the classes they chose to skip to be part of the sit-in. But wait, there's more. They also demanded that they be given a designated place on campus to cry. To cry. There's a quote. Is there an office they can go to? This student asked. I don't know what it would look like. But if they want to cry, meaning students, if they need to break down, where can they go? Because we're at a point where students are coming out of class to go to the bathroom to cry over those tweets. What? What are you talking about? The dean responds with a super strong defense of freedom of speech, expression, and educational debate by saying, and yes, this is sarcasm, quote, again, I was appalled to see the tweet. I tried to move as quickly as I can. Within hours of the tweet going out, I made my statement. He was so appalled by the tweets, and this is painful for all of us, but I know how painful and awful it is for you, and I know what a terrible burden it is. I am grateful for you taking the time to talk. I am grateful for your insights. I heard a lot today that I won't just be reflecting on, but that I'll be moving forward with, and I will be in dialogue with you about what we're doing. Sweet mother of God, what is happening at some of the elite institutions? You talk about cancel culture. We're just canceling intelligence. Listen, George Brockler, I'll be back with Dr. Benjamin Raby 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here on 710 KNUS. I want to get right to the VIP line because it has been so long since we've had him, and we have just the rest of this segment to talk. Dr. Benjamin Raby from someplace out in Massachusetts. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, buddy. I've missed you. I know you've been busy out there. A couple things before we get to the COVID stuff that you are the expert on. With Tom Brady retiring and the Patriots out of, obviously, any contention for the Super Bowl and all that, have you just decided to give up on the NFL altogether?
You know, I will never give up on the NFL. I won't give up on sports at all. But I do see some dark days for the next little while. I like Mac Jones, but I think he needs a bit more time.
I think so, too. I had really hoped for a Brady Rodgers NFC championship, or at least a football game, just something, you know, where they could. I was hoping for that, but then now it's over. And Tom Brady, obviously scared to continue to play, has decided.
That's
to move
right.
On.
I don't think he's up for it. He's very intimidated.
I'm offended by how young he looks. And that's just going to continue. I got to get me some of that T12 face lotion or whatever he's using. I'm glad to have you on. First off, how's the COVID out there? And I ask that in the context of we are having a bunch of the big metro area counties around here all pulling back from their mask mandates for schools and indoor places and all that. What's going on out there in Beantown?
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that that's starting to happen. Things are really quieting down here, too. There's still a lot of cases. You know, everything's relative. We still have a very high number of cases across the United States. But if you look at the rate of decline, we clearly are on the downslope of this now in a really good way. And that's true out here, too. People, you know, in Massachusetts, the general tenor is to be a lot more cautious. But I think, you know, very, very quickly, we're going to be in a position where we can really loosen things up.
Has the Delta abated? I mean, is it gone? Is it not an issue anymore? And I'd ask you the same question about Omicron.
Yeah, so Delta is definitely a very small proportion of all the cases now. I think in the places where they're systematically doing sequencing, it represents an extremely small number of cases. Where Omicron is clearly the dominant one, in some places it's completely saturated the communities. There's this new variant, the B2,
which is
starting to rise, but it so far it doesn't look like it's going to be a problem nearly like Omicron was in terms of cases and so on. And I think it doesn't look as it's nearly as problematic. So it's in the press right now because that's the strain that's coming up, but it doesn't mean that we're in for yet another wave. We don't have that information yet.
It doesn't seem like it's as transmissible, and it doesn't seem like it's as devastating in terms of symptoms and stuff.
So I think what we know for sure about it is that it has, like, if you look at the sequence, it has some of the features that, you know, might be of concern, like if it has like a lot of the mutations in the same region that Omicron does. But if you look at how those are predicted to like interact with antibodies, it looks like there will be a good antibody response to that strain. And that was really one of the big concerns about Omicron. And it was that we saw people, even when they're vaccinated, that they would get it at a higher rate than they would with Delta. But of course, they didn't get as sick. So we think that this is kind of like a little bit of the best of both worlds, that it's Omicron in terms of it's not as serious for most people. In addition to that, the immune response hopefully will be, you know, better than it was for Omicron. So hopefully this is a really good sign that we're starting to see the beginning of the end here.
Now, when you say the beginning of the end piece, is that in a while ago when you were on with us, you talked about sort of the life cycle of the virus and sort of how it mutates. Are we getting to that place that you thought / hoped we were getting to, where this takes on much more of a flu-like nature or something else?
Yeah, I hope so. I've stopped trying to predict because, like everybody else, we all look like fools because it's gotten us every single time and we've tried to predict. Because the only prediction that I've gotten right on this is that when this first started, I was pretty confident, unfortunately, that we were going to have close to 1 million people lose their lives.
Amazing.
In the United States because of this. And we will likely get close to that. We're already above 800,000. But with respect to the life cycle and when this is finally going to go away, I've stopped really predicting. What I will say is that as a society, we will get to a point at some time soon where even if this thing is still around, it's not going to have the same lethality that it has had. I want to just make this point. I think this is probably the most important point I can make. We know that there's been so much misinformation over the last 2 years because things have been moving so quickly. Different sources that are taken appropriately in context, others out of context. There is one fact that I can tell you that is 100% true, and all of your listeners need to know that I'm saying this from the heart. This bug, this virus, was very much more serious than the flu by a long shot. The mortality rate estimates we now have, the case fatality rate, yeah, meaning if you get infected, what is the chances you're going to die, are at least 10 to 20 times higher than the flu, okay? And among people over the age of 65, it's like 1 in 10 people who've gotten over time have died from this. Now, a lot of those people also have comorbidities.
Yeah, right.
But it was never anything like this for any other virus, respiratory virus we've seen since the Spanish flu of 1918. Fortunately, Omicron's case fatality rate is much lower. It's like 4 times lower. So it's still higher than the flu, but it's plummeting. And hopefully, as these strains continue to develop, most of them will be even more mild. And so we will get to a point where it's not going to be as big a deal 99% of the time, 5%.
We're talking with Dr. Benjamin Raby out there from Boston Children's and all the other good stuff that you do. I do want to ask you about the booster thing, specifically with this new, I don't know if it's an approval, but a move to have kids as young as 5 or whatever it is vaccinated. I want to get to that. But I do, as you're talking, it seems to me maybe the longest lasting impact of COVID won't really be anything about COVID. It'll be because of whatever has gone on in the nation. There is an increased doubt and skepticism about like the CDC and other medicine and other data and stuff like that we have just never seen before. And maybe that will be the longest lasting feature of this entire pandemic is, are we ever going to get back to a place where doctors can say something and people will largely be like, okay, I get it, as opposed to always finding some reason to doubt the science. Anyway, that's a different conversation. I saw an article.
I'll just say that I do think that you're right, that that's a long-lasting impact. But the key is we need leaders. We need leaders who are much more concerned about doing the right thing than doing the expedient thing. We need people who talk straight. We need people who act. And what all of this is unmasked, it's not that the CDC, you know, everybody's lost faith in the CDC. It's that they have not been doing their job.
That's right.
For a number of reasons. One of them is that they haven't gotten the support they need. The other is that they've put in place people in the past who really shouldn't have been there. There's a lot of different things that could be fixed. But we have to have people at every level of this taking the bull by the horns and not just criticizing each other for what we haven't done.
The one thing that I just cannot get past is when Dr. Fauci told us early on masks were irrelevant, don't make a difference, don't get them. And then later on says, actually, I was lying to you because I was trying to protect the event. I'm like, whoa, buddy. Now that you've said that, why would I ever trust you again? If there's always going to be a good reason for you to have lied to me, then I've stopped caring what you have to say. That's a different conversation. I want it because we only have a couple minutes. This booster thing, you've got some knowledge of the pediatric pulmonology, all this stuff. What are your thoughts on getting boosters or vaccinations or whatever for kids as little as 5 or under or whatever's going on?
Yeah, so, you know, most realize that the vast majority of vaccinations that we do, right, we actually do them in very, very young children, even below the age of 5, right? Children start getting their vaccination schedules, first few months after they're born. And then many of those vaccination schedules have boosters years later at, you know, different time points. So like all of us know about our, you know, diphtheria and tetanus and pertussis shots that we get at, you know, different intervals, and those are boosters. So there's a strong track record of safely immunizing and then boostering young children, even younger than 5. And I think that because, you know, relative to those other types of vaccines, you know, there's obviously extra concern because of the new mRNA technology and everything. But truthfully, from everything that's been done so far and all of the data that we have, there's nothing to suggest that this isn't any, you know, less safe in those children. And so I'm totally in favor of it.
Well, that's very interesting. And I think there's probably people out there who are head scratching, like, really? That, yeah. But meanwhile, everyone in my family's been vaccinated. Everybody except the 12-year-old who hasn't had it in long enough has been boosted and all that stuff too. So, I mean, I do the vaccine thing. I hope that we're at a place where in the near future we can have sort of an after-action review on here are the things we thought that turned out to not be true, here are the things we underestimated, or here are the things that we just nailed. I'd love to be able to do that with you moving forward.
That would be great, and I really hope that, to be honest, I hope that Congress does it, but doesn't do it from a political point of view. That's wishful thinking. But that they should do a deep dive and see all the things we've done right, which, by the way, there's a lot of things we should be proud of here. Our country has done a lot of amazing things around this pandemic, but the things that we haven't done well, we got to get better for next time, for sure.
I agree with you. And there's no better way to do it than to have it tackled from an apolitical transparency thing where we call out those who were right and call out those who were wrong and try to figure out how to be better the next time this happens, because I think what we've seen is there's going to be a next time.
Exactly.
Dr. Benjamin Raby, thank you, my man. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it, buddy.
Big Poppy, by the way, Hall of Fame.
No, I know. We can have that debate on performance-enhancing drugs later. I'll talk with you later, Benji. Hey, listen, thanks for G Behind the Glass, everybody that called in. I'll be back with you tomorrow for sure. Pete will be on tomorrow 5 to 9. You know what? Later today, live and local with a guy named Stephen Tubbs, George Brockler, 710, KNUS.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.